see the questions in your eyes. I know what's weighing on your mind, but you can be sure I know my part. 'Cause I stand beside you through the years. You'll only cry those hands.
Time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
Yes, we are, and welcome to the shooting bench. Welcome to this. Move that out of the way a little bit. There we go. All right, Monday, the 19th of September. Hope everybody had a good weekend. We did. What did we do this weekend? Oh, we did some yard selling this weekend. We have a family member that's needing to get out of Dodge here. That's apparently allergic to juniper. And if you're allergic to juniper, then northeastern Arizona is not where you need to be, on account of it's everywhere. Junipers are like weeds. They're all over the place. So we're trying to, she's downsizing a little bit and needing to head a little farther north. So we're going to, I'm trying to help her get a little money together and make that move as quick as she can there. She's having a tough time with it. All right. A lot of stuff. Let me check and see what all is going on in the chat room right here. And Molly O has joined us. Snowman. Snowman was there a while ago. And a bunch of the regulars. As I was saying, for you guys that just came in, I talked to Rights at Risk earlier and was wondering about her and haven't seen her for a while. And she is really, her and her whole family is having a really, really tough time. So if you guys could include her in your prayers, I'm sure that she would be very grateful for that. We're definitely going to include her in ours here. I'm sure everybody's been watching the news here lately. We had 3 and possibly 4 definite and confirmed terror attacks in the United States yesterday. We had nobody died. Nobody, no good guys died, but there was the bombing in Manhattan, injured, I think, 29 people. The bombing in New Jersey had the potential of injuring or killing quite a few people. It was at a Marine Corps charity race of some kind, and the race was late getting started, and so the bombs were set up, and these were IEDs. They were not sophisticated bombs, put in pressure cookers evidently, and they were set on a timer, so if the race would have started on time, then there would have been some people injured. So apparently it appears like there may have been some divine intervention there and slowed the race down a little bit, and no one was hurt. And then the other explosion, we won't say bombing because we don't know yet, was at an underground transformer or something like that in, I forgot where it was, but it was back east there somewhere also. So anyway, it is coming here. We knew it was coming. We knew it was going to be here before too long. We've had little spots here and there of this kind of thing, but and it's picking up in frequency, and I expect to see more of this. But you know what? There's always call for more gun control when something like this happens. But this one was a little unique because we had 2 bombings and a knifing. And one of the bombers and the knifer was stopped with a gun. Good guys with guns, just like what's the NRA guy? What's his name? Anyway, just like he said, one way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And that turned out to be exactly the truth here this weekend. So it puts us back out again into the discussion that we get into so often. And that is, are you carrying a gun? If you're not, do you intend to? Do you intend to every day of your life? I had a talk. I went down and got a haircut today and had a long talk with a guy there who's 88 years old. And he was just heartbroken. You know, he could tell he's got a little sheep in him, not as much as some,
he was completely in disbelief. He wasn't as angry as you and I are. He was sad and in disbelief the way that the country has turned and the way we way things are going right now. And he's trying, he said, yeah, you know, when I go certain places, when we travel, you know, I always put one in the car. And I said, you know what? What are you going to do? And I wasn't disrespectful to him because I know he thinks he's doing good. But I said something to the effect of, yeah, just tell the guy, tell the bad guy, just let him know you got to run to your car and you'll be right back and take care of business. And hopefully he got the point, but it just doesn't work, folks. It just is not going to work. It doesn't work now. It hasn't worked before, and it ain't going to work in the future. It has never worked. Just to have a gun in the car, or have a gun at home, or have a gun on your mind, but not with you. These things that have happened this weekend are dynamic and violent and very, very fast. They happen fast. And running to the car, it's not going to do it. It's not cutting it. So, you know, you're looking at however fast you are, you may not be fast enough to take care of that that guy, even if he's, you know, 7 yards away, 2 yards away. So if you're not able to draw and fire at least one shot, preferably two, in less than 2 seconds, you got some work to do. You should be down under a second and a half or thereabouts. At least have that, have strive for that. Some of us, as we get older, and depending on how you carry, it may be a little bit more difficult. And everything that you run into is not going to be a fast draw situation like that. But there are some. There are some, definitely. Looks like Yakima Glock posted a quote from Thomas. I think that was Thomas Jefferson there. It may have been George Washington. I think it's Thomas Jefferson. Said, I advise the gun. While this gives a moderate exercise to the body, it gives boldness, enterprise, and independence to the mind. Games played with the ball and others of that nature are too violent for the body and stamp no character on the mind. Let your gun, therefore, be the constant companion of your walks. Good quote. Far as I know, it's true. I've seen it many times. So if I don't know, I don't know what else to say. I'm hoping that all of the Shooting Bench listeners out there are carrying every day and are aware, immensely aware of what's going on around them. We've talked about this many times. It saddens me. It frustrates me as hard as we try to get people to carry, and there's still people that you know, I've got it out there in the car. If I need it, I've got it right there in the car. Okay, all right. Well, do whatever you think's best, man. You know, I was talking with a guy, if you guys were on Amy's show, you heard me, but there was, I recognized, I'm an admin for a gun owners site, Gun Owners of New Mexico, actually, on Facebook. And I saw a guy come in there that was requesting, membership in the site. And I don't grant membership to anyone that I don't go to their page and check them out just a little bit and see, you know, hopefully cut off some of the crap that people bring with them. And I looked at this guy, and of course it was a fairly common name, but it was kind of a coincidence that he was retired and from from Grants, where I grew up there. So I figured it was him, and I went ahead and granted him membership in the site. And I messaged him, and I said, were you a retired state patrol there? And he said no, and he was a city cop. And I said, okay, well, I thought I recognized the name, and I guess he had a family member that was also in there at an earlier time. And he said, I said, I grew up there about the time that you were, you know, a cop in there. And he went and he said, hey, I recognized the name right away. I recognized the, or went to your page and saw the picture and remembered you right away. So, yeah, what he would remember me of probably is not the best side of me. That was back in the 70s, maybe early 80s. No, it had to have been 70s probably, because I was pretty much gone by, I was gone in the 70s. I came back, I don't remember when it was, but anyway, it was funny talking to him, and hopefully he doesn't hold anything against me that he probably remembers me for. I was not a good boy a lot of times when I was a kid, but I've gotten over it for the most part. And all right, but okay, let's move on here. We've got too many things to talk about. There's, you know, we're always talking about big government and crack down on people for different things. And over the period of how many years have we been doing this show? 10, 11 years now. We've talked about cops shutting down lemonade stands and confiscating basketball goals and just all manner of things that were wrong and they had no business doing. Now, of course, they get their orders from higher up. So, but there's a new one here now. It just came out a few days ago. Now they're cracking down on people sharing books. I don't know if any of you saw this story or not. But there's people that are putting what looks like a large birdhouse on a pole out there. It's probably, I would guess, by looking at the picture, it's a couple of feet high. Maybe all the way to the peak of the house, it might be 3 feet, about 2 feet wide and probably a foot deep. And it's full of books, and they, you know, people come and they want a book, they take it, and they leave another one in its place. It's a neat idea, and it said it's worked out really well, considering how many people out there are jerks and steal stuff and damage the books and do all kinds of other things. They said it's been really, really, you know, real easy going type deal. So, speaking of jerks, the government cracking down on this. They said last summer in Kansas, a 9-year-old was loving his little free library, they called it, until at least two residents there proved that people will complain about something no matter how harmless, how none of their business it is. And so anyway, the city council said that this was in Leawood, Kansas. Said it received a couple of complaints. A couple. That's like not very many. And probably a whole lot of other people borrowing and returning and replacing these books and having a good time and enjoy it. So they got a couple of complaints, saying that this was an illegal detached structure, meaning that if you don't have all the proper permits and all that stuff and didn't get their blessing to build this little structure, it's a box on a post. You know, it takes up 1 square foot of land on your property. Unbelievable. An illegal detached structure. And told the the people there that owned it, that they would face a fine if they didn't remove the little free library by a certain date in from their yard by a certain date. So here we have all manner of crime. We have people that are homeless, people that are orphans. We have the infrastructure crumbling around our ears all over the country. We have terrorism going on, starting to pick up. And these people have nothing better to do than worry about a little free library that takes up less than 1 square foot of someone's property. It's neat. It was well built. It's attractive little deal. It doesn't look shoddy at all. And that was in Kansas. Officials in Los Angeles and Shreveport, Louisiana, told owners of their little homemade lending libraries that they're in violation of city codes and asked them to remove or relocate their little library, their little book collection. This is why we can't have nice things. These things are on private property, not big enough to hold anything except a, 10 or 20 little books. Not any way in the world that they could be harming anybody. A couple of complaints is all that it takes. Matty Buck, I hope you're not right, but that's not that far-fetched. 20 years ago, that would have been way far-fetched. In 2016, burning books may be right around the corner. You never know. Stupid, ridiculous story, though, and it ticks me off till I can't stand it. I hate this kind of stuff. By the way, I'll mention this probably again Wednesday, but Missouri has just become the 12th state to allow constitutional carry. I hate to use that term, to allow carry without a permit. The Missouri State Senate and State House have voted to make Missouri the 12th state to allow adults to carry concealed handguns without a permit. Missouri lawmakers voted on Wednesday to override the governor's veto of legislation that would eliminate permit requirements to carry a firearm by a landslide of 24-6. The State House also supported the override 112-41. That's what I'm talking about. Get out and exercise your rights, sir. Make your Congress critters know where you stand on this. 12th state, that's pretty good. That's a hair over 20% now of all the states, and still going strong. This one will go into effect on January 1st. It allows people to carry concealed weapons anywhere that currently allows open carry. Missouri joins the rank of Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Idaho, Kansas, Maine, Montana, Mississippi, Vermont, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Montana's law doesn't actually cover the entire state. There's some stipulations there about cities or population. I don't remember exactly what it was, but almost a little over 99% of the state, constitutional carry is allowed. Other states allow limited carry, such as unloaded weapons with loaded magazines and such as that. So, Missouri is also going to expand the state's Stand Your Ground law, which is a very good thing. It allows citizens to use deadly force on public property if they perceive a deadly threat. In Arizona, we have Castle Doctrine, and Missouri's legislation is also going to expand their Castle Doctrine law. This is the ability to defend your home or family from intruders by allowing guests and babysitters to use deadly force if necessary. It doesn't have to be your home. So good for them. Missouri's show me state. They're showing other states that they are grown up and responsible, and they can handle this. They said the debate over this bill lasted about 3 hours. And there's some NRA members there. Bloomberg's Every Town for Gun Safety, some of that group was there. And they got spanked, so that's awesome. I'm okay with that. All right. Well, I think we need to take a little break here, so stand by here, and I'll be shortly back. Country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network.
absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio, Liberty Lounge, every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern, right here on Survival Circle. Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back. Welcome to the Shooting Bench again. I see Edge of the Woods has joined us there. And it's funny that you would pick tonight. I know it's late and everything. But, well, I guess I know why you joined us tonight. Never mind. But it's funny that you joined us tonight, because one of the things that I was going to talk about just briefly here, I would suggest that if you haven't done it already, to get on Edge of the Woods mailing list for the Medic Shack. He's got a, I was looking at, I just joined it myself. I hadn't thought about it, and I don't remember. I saw a Facebook post with something on there about Southwest plants and medicinal plants and whatnot, and I was most impressed by the pictures and the descriptions and everything there. So I signed up right away, and I would suggest that all of you do that. You guys know we miss Chuck, and he's got a lot of stuff going on, just like all of us do, and it's worse now. So, it's going to be difficult for him. Hopefully, he'll come back one of these days and get back on the Survival Circle with us. But until when and if that happens, get on his mailing list. And if you need some stuff for, blowout kits, trauma kits, and any other type of stuff, get it from Chuck. Chuck has got a lot of that stuff in stock. He knows what you need. Tell him what you're thinking about, and give him a holler. It's Chuck. If you're still, I don't know if he's still with us there or not. Let me see. If you are, go ahead and put your email in there if you want to, where people can get a hold of you. Or actually, just go to his website. Go to the Medic Shack, and you can get all the contact information from there. But I, you know, being as how, you know, we're in the position that we're in here, I just can't recommend enough that you look into stuff like this to help with your alternative medical means and whatnot. And the Medic Shack is a damn fine place to do that. I got into a, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I got into a discussion here with some idiot on Facebook. And you know, there's a plenty of them out there too. Plenty of idiots on Facebook. And he was talking about, he was just adamant that there was no one out there that, no country allowed their or had mandatory service time in the military for women. Well, there's lots of countries out there that allow women to join, but there are very few that force their women to join. One of them is Norway, and the other one, of course, is Israel. And then I told him this, and I finally had to go. I finally just quit. I went and got screenshots from the Israeli Defense Force page and all that, and he just wouldn't believe it. But there's a the IDF has a company. It's called, and I'm not sure how to pronounce this. It's Hebrew. It's called it's NACHSOL.
like Nakshol or something like that. It's Hebrew for giant wave. It's the Nakshol Reconnaissance Company. This is part of the 80th Division of the Southern Command, stationed along the Egyptian-Israeli border. And this company is made up entirely of women. So it's the only unit in the world made up entirely of female combat soldiers. Their company commander on down, everything is women. And she said that the missions that are undertaken by her unit's women are no less impressive than those performed by their male counterparts. She said, "My girls often carry out tasks more difficult than those of male soldiers." So it was interesting. I really hadn't gotten into this too much before. I did know that women were allowed. I mean, that they did have combat roles in Israel, and I knew that they had, you know, a 2-year obligation compared to a 3-year for males, and the this Renaissance company has gained a reputation around the world. It's actually attracted women from around the world. One of them was a 22-year-old corporal from who was studying at Washington University in St. Louis. She took a leave of absence to go and serve with these girls in this reconnaissance company. And she liked it so much, she decided to just stay in Israel. She completed her studies after she got out of the service. And she stayed there and finished her finished up her, her schooling there. So interesting stuff. And there's tons of pictures of these girls out there. A good many of them are stunningly beautiful. And there's just something about a long-legged gal carrying an AR-15 that is very attractive, you know. And it's I don't know. I have no idea what their success rate is or what their, you know, what's going on in their world. But I thought it was pretty cool anyway. So let's move on here. Bigger and better things. In Switzerland, let's see. In Switzerland, I guess they have told the, this was a couple of weeks ago. You know, in Switzerland, they've got some, got a little bit different rules there as far as people taking their service weapons home with them, you know, after they fulfill their mandatory service time and everything. So there's a little friction now between Switzerland and the European Union over the EU having plans to tighten up gun control a little bit. And people in Switzerland, this has not been a problem with the people in Switzerland. They are disciplined, mature, responsible adults, and there has never been a problem, or very minor and extremely rare cases that that there's been any issues there. So, and so understandably, the Swiss are not impressed with this. They there's a proposed directive which would apply to non-European Union members, Switzerland, only because it's part of Europe's open border system. Now, if it's a non-EU member, how do they propose to enforce this directive? But the Swiss are going to have none of it. There's a group of vets there and say that's not going to be happening. I don't know if they're learning from us or if we learned from them, but this policy was drafted, or this directive was drafted after the attacks in Paris last year, and reinforced, I guess, with some attacks that happened this year. And then 2 months ago, the justice minister returned from meetings in Brussels saying that she had successfully negotiated against this ban, that they were, where they were trying to take their assault rifles, their military rifles, away from them. But the fine print evidently was a little more complicated. It said EU members demanded concessions, including psychological tests and club membership. I'm sure that's going to go over like a turd in a punch bowl. But Swiss gun rights proponents are now complaining this could disarm thousands of law-abiding citizens and that it would encroach on Switzerland's heritage and national identity that includes a well-armed citizenry. When conflicts arise, Switzerland must put its sovereignty first. In an emergency, Switzerland should be ready to exit the open border deal there. I don't know how to pronounce it. Switzerland has one of the highest rates of private gun ownership in Europe, with nearly 48% of households owning a gun. That's even higher than here. In France, there are about 30 weapons per 100 people, while the figure in Great Britain is about 6.7 per 100 people. According to an Australian-based outfit there. However, Switzerland gun-related crime is low, and the high number of privately owned guns harks back to a long tradition of self-defense, to the Swiss policy of near universal conscription, drafting the young men and women there. In 2015, 11% of the 20,600 soldiers who left the Swiss Army opted to keep their assault rifles, which upon departure are modified to fire single shots. They're made into semi-automatics, evidently. The number of soldiers choosing to keep their weapons has been declining for several years. That's unfortunate. Switzerland's grassroots gun lobby, Pro Tell, named after the 14th century folk hero William Tell, said it will take the matter to voters if the European gun restrictions result in stricter ownership standards on Swiss soil. You know, this is, Switzerland's no different than here. We've got all these people, they said the private gun ownership is waning. And that's very much like here. We have too many people that are especially the youth, you know, the college-age kids and high school kids and whatnot. They're just not being raised the way a lot of us were. They're not being, the urgency and importance of having these weapons is not being impressed upon them. And I think they just flat do not understand what they should be doing. So, anyway, come up this last Friday. I did two classes over in Snowflake, and it really turned out good. These people were real excited about this. As a matter of fact, I have now been invited after these word getting around here. I've been invited to do similar things over in New Mexico. This will be down in Reserve first week in October. And I think these classes are going to pick up here a little bit. We're going to do it again here in Sholo on the 15th of October. Of course, I have this coming weekend, I have the 3-day personal defense handgun class in Moriarty. 3-day class with a night shoot, and that's going to be fun. Hopefully, Edge of the Woods. I don't know if you're still with us. You might be able to join us for that. I think. Let's see. Yeah, he's still in there with us. So that would be cool. And I think that's that's going to cover up everything that we can do in September and October. They've got some other stuff going on. First weekend. What am I doing the first weekend? I'll have to go look at my schedule. Anyway, we've got something going on there. And, I know there's the third weekend. I have a skeet shoot, a trap shoot going on here for certain members of the church. We're going to go out with the young men and go out and do some shotgun shooting and have a barbecue, cook some hot dogs and hamburgers out there. We did it last year, and it was a hell of a lot of fun. We had a blast. Or maybe that was the wrong term. We had a ball. But doing it again this year. We're going to have more people this year. And I'm real excited about doing that. So I'm saving that date just for that. And then, let me look here. I got something going on again at the end of the month. See if I can figure out what that is. I haven't memorized everything here. No, maybe I don't. Okay. All right, I do have a date left open in October. All right, cool. Excellent. And then I've got some stuff going on the second weekend that I'll tell you about after it's over with. And I think you'll be excited about that. Oops, we have breaking news here. Stand by.
On a mountainside, not afraid to die. Hands held high, no gun in sight. They shot him down on his way to town. A cowboy stand.
Stand with you.
Cowboy stand.
No matter how it ends, it matters how you stand.
Well,
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. Yeah, I see Northwest Heavy's joined us there. Welcome, brother. Glad to see you in here. Hey, I forgot, speaking of prayers, I forgot something. I need you all to pay attention here for a minute. You remember, and I know it's okay to say this because she's already put it out, you know, on other means. So, you remember Mama Grizzly that's been in here a few times. Well, Mama Grizzly went out for a walk, went to see a neighbor. Was gone an hour or so, and she came back and found her husband dead in the on the bedroom floor in there. Most unexpected. No problems, no prior, no warning, no concern, no nothing. Apparently it was a from the looks of the from the description, it was almost certainly a heart attack. But, you know, I always thought he was a nice guy. I've met him, hell of a nice guy, and has done really well for himself. And it's just it's a damn shame. It's not she's having a hard time with this, of course. And, you know, there's always that nagging guilt and stuff that that people have in instances like that. So if you're the praying type, I would ask you to say a prayer for Mama Grizzly also. She's I don't know what, as far as I knew, as far as anybody knew, there was no health problems or anything, just bang. She was gone an hour, and he was dead when she got back. So it breaks my heart because they were good, good people. And so anyway, we'll just continue to march as best we can. But Radio Doc, her husband died very unexpectedly here just a couple of days ago. So. Or 3 days ago, I guess. Okay, well, let's move along here. Amy just sent me something. I'm not sure what this is. We're going to listen to it together here. Radio Doc, I'm not sure. You might want to, if your sound's in right now, you might want to refresh and see if that'll help your sound a little bit. Amy just sent me something, and I'm going to check this out. We're going to listen to it together. It's looks like it come off of Fox News, so I'm sure the language is okay. Let's. This is not good. Not good at all. Stand by. And
about a report by the internal inspector general of the Department of Homeland Security just out, in which it says some 858 people who were set to be deported, immigrants set to be deported from what they call special interest countries. These are countries that are of concern for national security to the United States. They were, according to this report, mistakenly given citizenship because the...
Stop. How do you mistakenly give citizenship? How do you accidentally grant citizenship to almost 1,000 people? Answer me that. Think about that for a minute.
Fingerprints were not on file, and they were using different dates of birth, and they managed to get through 858. They say at least that many. They also point out that these people could potentially serve in law enforcement and have security clearance, and that there's an ongoing investigation. This fits, Jenna, into what the concern about screening immigrants coming into the country, let alone Syrian refugees, but this is an internal DHS report in this administration.
Okay, well, that's just damn great. We have accidentally granted citizenship to 858 could be terrorists here. I can't even, that just blows me away. Well, anyway. All right. Well, let me go and over here and check. I've got to get the right deal up here. I've lost it. Stand, there it is. All right, there it is. You know, I don't know if I remember this, but some of you may not, especially some of you younger ones, younger listeners. This wasn't that long ago. What is it, 30 years ago? On this day in 1985, 12,000 people were killed in Mexico City. 8.1 earthquake. 12,000 killed, 40,000 injured. That's quite an earthquake there. Of course, I don't know how oh, good, Radio Doc. I'm glad you got it squared away there. I don't know. Well, we'll leave that there for right now. You guys remember the, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, Alexander Solzhenitsyn or something like that. There's a quote that I read every once in a while, and I know all of you are familiar with it. It, let me see if I can find it. There it is. I keep it handy because I read it every once in a while because I think about I think about things that are going on with the long arm of the law. Well, I shouldn't say the long arm of the law. That's not true. It's the overreach primarily of the federal government at all levels. And we are going to live to a point where we are thinking the same thing that Alexander did, whatever his last name is, Solzhenitsyn or something. We're going to be thinking the same thing he did. And that quote that I read all the time, or once in a while, starts out, and how we burned in the camps later thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family. Or, if during periods of mass arrests, for example, in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door, and at every step on the staircase, but had understood they had nothing left to lose, and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, whatever else was at hand. The organs would very quickly have suffered a shortage of officers and transport, and notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt. If we didn't love freedom enough, and even more, we had no awareness of the real situation. We purely and simply deserved everything that happened afterwards. And it's sad to say that we're going to be saying the same thing. In 1974, on this day, the KGB started a large-scale operation to discredit Alexander. He was a novelist, and cut his communications with Soviet dissidents as late as 1974. I think that's awesome. On this day in 1966, there was a few. The reason I have these is I was doing a stuff for Amy's show there. Doing some birthdays, and I found some that did some history dates and a couple of birthdays that you know, there's nothing really fit in with her show, so I squirreled them off to the side to share them with you. And this next one, I'll share with you in just a minute.
Rescue.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
We didn't earn those chairs. Your talent didn't earn those chairs. How tall you are, how fast you run, how well you shoot, didn't earn those chairs. Me draw up a play, me recruit real hard, me work real hard, I didn't earn the chair. These guys, when they were your age, interrupted their life. They paused their education. They changed their career. And they gave their life for those chairs. Do you guys understand what I'm saying? Not us. Not us. And so when the anthem is played, we're going to stand like grown men, and we're going to honor men like this that gave their life so we could have a chair to sit in. And in the 2.5 minutes that the song is played and somebody sings it or the music is played, we're going to stand at attention in honor of these men. And we're not going to sway back and forth. We're not messing with our short. We're not messing with our jersey. Those 2.5 minutes we're going to give to the people that earn these chairs. Because that freedom allows us to do what we're doing. I don't care if you sing, but I want you to know the words. And I want you to be respectful of the words. Because those words represent people's lives. And when we stand, we're going to put our right hand over our heart and our left hand behind our back. And we're not moving. And we're not looking down. And we're not swaying. We're standing still with perfect body language. And all that we're thinking about is these men who earned the right for these chairs to be here.
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly gleaming, and the rocket's red glare, the first seen there, gave proof through the
do away with that for the time being. That coach, really, I know the volume was way down on that. Hopefully you guys turned it up and were able to hear that. I will, when I put it out on the podcast, I'll take that and enhance it and get it, get the volume up on it a little bit. But I'm very grateful, very proud of that coach for standing in front of his team and telling them what they need to do while the national anthem is being played. My goodness, got hiccups. Excuse me. Wow, that was bad. Still is bad. Hang on. Let's see if I can make that go away. Tried to scare myself, and I don't know if it worked or not. I shouldn't have even played that because it ticks me off so terribly bad.
that this is even a consideration. We talked about this the other day. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. But we're seeing entire teams now. We're seeing high school kids follow these professional ball players because they're heroes. They think it's right. If they're doing it, why shouldn't they do it? It's amazing to me that Tim Tebow was exercising his right, showing his beliefs by kneeling, after, I don't remember if it was after a touchdown during the game or whatever it was, or after the game. But at any rate, I don't care either. It doesn't matter. I mean, he can do it whenever he wants to. It means nothing to me. It means, I shouldn't say it means nothing. That didn't come out right. It didn't. I just never thought about it. I looked at it and said, well, good. I'm glad. Good for him. I just never give it any thought. But, Edge of the Woods, what are you talking about Hillary won? Hillary won what? I don't know what she's doing that she could have won at, and then these guys, the news media was all over Tim Tebow for doing that, and these guys are expressing their rights, expressing their opinions here, and the news media, oh yeah, well it's okay. They were expressing their First Amendment rights and whatnot. So the whole thing just blows me away. It just pisses me off so bad that I can't stand it. But like I said, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. But there's a few coaches out there, very few, that have really, there's one coach that said, if you sit down during the national anthem, you're going to stay sitting for the entire game. And I've heard that they were going to. I've heard that the who was it? The 49ers, the first guy that started this. I heard they were going to cut him, and I don't know if that's the truth or not. I haven't looked it up to see. But as I said the other day, this is not the flag and the national anthem has nothing to do with the government. It has nothing to do with oppression. It has nothing to do with slavery. It has nothing to do with racial equality. It had nothing to do with nothing. It's about the country. It's about our country. It's about freedom. It's about liberty, righteousness, and there's just it tears my heart out that these people would do that. I can't imagine. I just couldn't. I couldn't if I was alone in that gymnasium and no one else was in there and they started playing that song, I would come to attention and show respect for it. Of course I wouldn't, I guess, if they played it over and over and over, but at least the first time. I just don't get it. And that's right, Molly, respect for those that fought and died for your right to set that out, I understand that they have a right to do that. I understand, and I support that right. And it doesn't piss me off any less. Yeah, Edge of the Woods, now I see what you mean. It worked, too. Edge would say he scared the hiccups out of me when he put that on there about Hillary won. Anyway. Now I'm going to have a coughing fit for laughing too hard. But I told this story quite a long time ago, and I would have given anything to have a video of it at the time. Back then, your cell phone videos were... number one, they were pretty crappy anyway. Number two, they hadn't had videos on them long enough that I would even thought about it. Now it's just natural. Everybody just whoops their phone out and takes video of every single thing that happens. But I took three of my kids. My oldest one was riding in rodeo. The three youngest ones were with me. And we walked up there. It was which rodeo was it? It was at the it was the Bi-County Fair in Grants, or I think it was that. Anyway, whatever it was, doesn't matter. We stopped at the little booth there to buy our tickets. And about the time we got there, there was a narrow chain link corridor, a little hallway, up to the stand, and no way to get around. And we were at the head of the line. We were at the ticket booth, anyway. And they had the grand opening of, the grand entry, I should say, grand entry. At the rodeo, where the you know, there's always a rodeo queen or some gal comes out and on a horse with the flag, and they make a couple of laps around the arena while the national anthem is playing. It's always the highlight of a rodeo when I go to it, is the grand entry. So me and my three kids were there at the to get our tickets. And the national anthem started playing. Of course, my kids, being raised by me, we all just immediately just stop what we're doing. And of course, I always render the hand salute when I am, when that happens, when I'm out there. My kids put their hands over there, and we stood there for the entire grand entry. And the people behind us were angry because we were holding up the line. But they didn't say anything, you know, because even then, as long, they would not have done the same thing, obviously, because they were grumbling and wanting us to hurry up. They would not have done the same thing. But they also didn't get very vocal about it, because they how disrespectful is that? I mean, people just didn't think about it then. It wasn't they may not. You know, you see it during parades and rodeos and ball games and everything. There's always a few there that are just so engrossed in their girlfriends or their war stories or their whatever it is that they're doing, or their popcorn or something, and just don't stand up to it. There's a difference between being or to me anyway. There's a little bit of difference between those that just don't do anything. Which also pisses me off. But between those and the ones that intentionally set it out, that were already standing and then set down, or already standing and then take a knee. They're not taking a knee to pray. They're taking a knee in protest. To me, there's quite a bit of difference there. Both of them tick me off, but there's still a difference. You know, when people in the standing on the street when the flag goes by, when the colors go by, as traditionally, all you are required, or all you're supposed to do, is stand for the first flag that comes by, the one that's leading the parade. Hell, I stand up for every one of them. Every time one of them comes by, I'll snap to attention and salute it, or put my hand over my heart or whatever, you know, while it's going by. It only takes, you know, from the time that it gets close to you until it passes you, you know, you're talking about 30 seconds, 20 seconds. So what? I just do. I always have. And my kids were raised that way, and I hope it sticks with them. And they continue to do that for years to come. But my big pet peeve right now is all these ball players that are not respecting the flag. And again, it has nothing to do with anything that they're protesting. It's their country. It's their freedom. It has nothing to do with their ancestors or, you know, be it Black Lives Matter or any of that kind of ridiculous, stupid, pathetic crap. It's all about the country. Well, one of the, it was on this day in 1966 that Eric Rudolph was born. You guys remember Eric Rudolph? Also known as the Olympic Park Bomber. he was the one that he was convicted for a series of anti-abortion and anti-homo bombings and stuff down in the southern part of the United States back in the late 90s. Killed a couple of people, injured quite a few more. So, you know, he was the terrorist of the day there. But, you know, he spent 5 years on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. He was finally caught in 2003. In 2005, as part of a plea bargain, he pleaded guilty to a few state and federal charges and accepted 4 consecutive life sentences, in exchange for avoiding a trial and potential death sentence. Wow, yeah, that would have been, I would have never done that. I say that, I'm sitting here safe and sound in my office talking on the radio, but I can't. 4 consecutive life sentences. You're going to trade that for avoiding a trial and a possible death sentence? I don't think I would do that. I just not into spending 4 lifetimes, which I, you know, I understand that's not going to happen. But anyway, he stayed in the, or he still is in the Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado. But what was interesting about Eric Rudolph, he had a little survivalist in him. He had some Army training. He actually served with the 82nd Airborne for a time. And due to smoking dope, he wound up being discharged out of there. But in the year before his discharge, he had attended the Air Assault School at Fort Campbell. So he had a little training. What was interesting about him is all this time that they were hunting him, and it was quite the manhunt. I remember all the manpower and equipment and everything they had out there, and he just kept outsmarting them. And, you know, finally in 2003 they caught him, but he was living out in the woods. He'd come into town very discreetly. And from what I remember, he came in, you know, he was considered a hero from a lot of people, but I don't consider him a hero. What he did was cowardly and wrong and all of that. But I got to give him credit for, you know, staying free for as long as he did by using his outdoor skills. Somebody would spot him, every once in a while, a time or two, and he confessed to 3 other bombings. There was an abortion clinic in Atlanta. That was in Sandy Springs. We did some work in Sandy Springs when I was working in Atlanta. But and the Lounge of Atlanta, it was a lesbian bar in February of 1997. Didn't kill anybody in that one. Then an abortion clinic in Birmingham, Alabama. That was the one where he killed a police officer and a part-time injured a couple more. Had some, the bombs that he used were nail bombs made up of dynamite surrounded by nails, so he may have learned part of that, or at least gotten the idea while he was in the service. But he built shelters out in the woods, and they'd find one and have a little bit of a clue for a little while, and he'd just disappear. And it was an interesting chase there while they were going through all this. I thought it was kind of neat. But they got him, and rightfully so. He's in prison now. They said that essays written by him that condone violence and militant action have been published on the internet by an Army of God anti-abortion activist. While victims maintain that Rudolph's messages are harassment and could incite violence, According to Alice Martin, the United States Attorney for the Northern District of Alabama, when Rudolph was prosecuted for the Alabama bombing, the prison can do little to restrict their publication. An inmate does not lose his freedom of speech. As reported in an April 8, 2013 Alabama blog article, in February 2013 with the help of his brother, Lulu.com published Rudolph's book, Between the Lines of Drift, The Memoirs of a Militant. In April 2013, the U.S. Attorney General seized $200 to help pay off... He seized $200 from him to help pay off the $1 million that Rudolph owes in restitution to the state of Alabama. The book has since been republished and has been made available through the Army of God website. So, he's already paid $200 on his $1 million bill there. So, good for him. He ought to have that paid off in no time. Oh, well. All right. Well, it's that time again, and I'll be shortly back.
The beautiful girl that I met made in Japan. The beauty of her face was beyond my wildest dreams. Like cherry blossoms blooming in the mountain in the early spring. As we walked by the river and she softly took hold of my hand, when I fell deep in love with the girl made in Japan. In the dark of night we would lay on Tokyo Bay, and the singing of the birds woke us up at the break of day. Her smiling eyes always seemed to try to understand all the love in my heart for the girl made in Japan. My transistor radio comes from far away, and when it's night been promised to another man. That's when I left my heart with the girl made in Japan. Yes, my heart will always be with the girl made in Japan.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back. There's still a lot of stuff going on. Let me see if I can get past this here. All right. There's a story, I don't know if you guys, any of you subscribe to Ammoland, the shooting sports news outfit, and they just came out with a story, well, they didn't just come out with it, it's been 3 or 4 months ago, but I've saved this for quite a while, And this is a guy that reviews all the what he considers to be the best pistol reload methods. The main pistol meaning semi-automatic pistol, not revolvers. And he's got some tips here for keeping your magazines organized and ready. And for the most part, I agree with him. But, there's some things that I don't, though. So I'm going to go over these. He's got four different means, four different ways to reload. And I know that these do exist, and I've used them. But for our classes and what we do for self-defense, there's really only two of them that I'm concerned about. There are four, and that is the emergency reload, which I very much agree with. That means that you've shot to slide lock. Lock the slide back on an empty magazine, and now it has become an emergency. You're out of ammo, and he may not be. So this constitutes an emergency. And then there's the speed reload, and the speed reload I don't agree with at all. It's strictly a competition thing, just like the reload with retention. And then they have the tactical reload, which I very much agree with. So we're going to listen to his ideas here on these. On the emergency reload, he said, and it's, like I said, it's locked back on an empty chamber. Or empty magazine, I mean. So, in what he's telling you is that you press the magazine release to release the empty magazine, insert the new fully loaded magazine by placing your index finger of your support hand on the front of the magazine to help guide it in, and then release the slide forward. There's a couple of other steps there that I'd like to add in there, and one is on the emergency reload. He doesn't go through dropping the magazine out. And what we teach people is we don't want to drop the magazine and then reach for a magazine to replace it. You don't want to drop the magazine until you've already secured the new one and headed that way with it. You'd like for them to pass in midair. And why is that important? Well, if the bad guy's standing there, it's kind of low light. He's not too far away. He sees you drop that magazine. If he's on the ball, if he's on his toes, and sees you drop that magazine and reach for a new one, he's got time to step out there and blaze away at you. So you should just get the first one out of the way in time to get the loaded one back in the gun. On the speed reload, he's saying you can do a speed reload when the magazine is not empty. The slide is forward and not locked back. The gun is in battery with a round in the chamber. Now, the problem with this is, that's why the reason I say this is all competition, and I don't teach it at all. I don't recommend it. I don't suggest it. I tell people about it, and I only tell them why, because I want them to understand why I don't want them to do it. I can see that there is a benefit to that, and I got to be truthful with you. I've done it when I used to shoot competition, but I saw the silliness of it then. And that is your partially expended magazine. You drop it out of the gun and allow it to fall to the ground, and put your full magazine in. The reason you do this is because you've basically counted your shots, or watched someone else run the course of fire there, and you say, okay, I need to, at that point right there, I need to have a new magazine in the gun, because shooting it dry and replacing it, you're assuming that this is going to cost you enough time to be detrimental to your score. So, and this is one of the several bad habits that people learn in these the competitions that I think are detrimental to your performance on the street in a real life, you know, in a lethal force scenario. So, it says that the purpose of the speed reload is to keep your pistol completely loaded to full capacity and quickly recharge it during a dangerous encounter when you have a quick chance in the gunfight to do so. He's talking about gunfight. I'm talking about competition. If you have a chance to do this, you have a chance to do a tactical reload. I can think of no time ever under any circumstance whatsoever that you would drop a magazine that still has some ammunition in it on the ground. Chances are that may be the only magazine you have on you. Most of us don't carry 4, 5, or 6 magazines. You can get away with that in competition because you carry all these extra magazines. But it's, you know, like I've told you guys 1,000 times, it's hard enough to get somebody to carry 1 extra magazine, much less 2. So it doesn't make any sense to me at all. It says that some question whether or not you should do a speed reload, dropping the partially loaded magazine to the ground with the speed reload. Let's see, during the lull, you need to have your gun loaded with as much ammo as you can and back in use quickly because your life may directly depend on it. The way he says this, it says right here, it was done when you have a temporary calm interval, a lull or a lack of activity or movement. Why? I don't understand how he thinks this is desirable over a tactical reload. You're talking about, no difference in time at all, and I'm not so sure that a tactical reload may not even be a little bit faster. You're snatching one out of there just as quick as you can and replacing it with one that's already in your hand. Now, one thing that they teach about tactical, one thing that has changed, and there are a couple of people out there that teach tactical reloads, and that is to take, to reach back and see if you have another magazine, then take the magazine out of your gun and stow it, and then pick the other one up and put it in the gun, which is absolutely amazingly senseless to me. I don't get it. I've never understood why anyone would teach that. I don't get it. I don't understand. If you reach back for the magazine and there's not one there, then you're not going to do a tactical reload. I don't have to reach back and touch and see if there is one and then do my tactical reload. Because if there's not, I'm not going to do a tactical reload. Now, with the speed reload, that is directly, what's the word I'm looking for? Not counterintuitive, but it directly contradicts the speed reload. With the speed reload, you are to drop your magazine and grab another one and stick it in the gun. What if you drop that magazine a little too quick before you grab that other one and you find out it's not there? The technical technical term for that is bad. So with the tactical reload, I'm not going to drop the other one out until I have a fresh one in my hand. And then I'll replace it. So like I said, if I reach back and my magazine pouch is empty because I've already done that or something, then I'll just have to live with what I got. So the steps here for the speed reload. Now listen to what he says. Number one, press the magazine release with your strong hand thumb to eject the partially empty magazine on the ground. Keep the gun high, center chest, high ready position, near your chin to concurrently scan for threats. Improve peripheral vision and see the target quicker. Okay. In a speed reload, an advantage is that the gun is still in battery and loaded with a round in the chamber, so you do not have to rack the slide and there is less manipulation. The disadvantage is that you have ejected a mag with rounds in it on the ground. Okay, let's stop right there before we go any farther. Okay, I can see the I can see this completely in competition. Like I said, I've done it. In a defensive situation, this still makes no sense to me. This is a strictly contrived benefit of doing this. You know, there's always the crowd out there that says, well, that one round may be the one that gets you home. So you're saying you'd have one round in the chamber, an empty magazine well, and a magazine with an unknown number of rounds coming up to go in the gun. But you've got one round in there in case you need it right away. All right, so you fire your one emergency round left that you have in the chamber, and now the slide is down. The slide went home on an empty chamber. It did not lock back because there was no empty magazine in there. You didn't replace it while there's still a round in the chamber with your tactical reload. So now you're going to stick your magazine in there, and you have to rack the slide to get the gun back in battery. During this time, the bad guy is shooting you to death or doing his best. So number two says, a split second before your strong hand thumb presses the magazine release to release the magazine on the ground, your support hand should have grabbed and started pulling out a new fully loaded magazine from where it is stowed. You should index your strong arm's elbow inward into the bottom of your rib cage while angling the gun in your strong hand upwards. At the same time, your strong hand thumb should move to the magazine, to the mag release button. Well, there's, you know, the several places that I've trained and the way we train is you don't there. Why would you want to point? What did he say? Angling the gun in your strong hand upwards. Okay, you have to. We teach people to do it with the gun level, still pointed at the threat, so that while you're doing this so quickly, the bad guy can't tell if the slide's locked to the rear or not. But the moment you tip that up, you're doing a couple of things. You could, if you do it too quickly, you're going to slow down the free fall of the magazine to come out. The gravity is not going to be, there won't be as much gravity at that point. That's a joke, you know. Every time I drop something, Amy says, oh, there's a lot of gravity right there, isn't there? Well, so anyway, if you tilt the barrel up a little bit, it does two things. It makes it easier to see that the slide is, in fact, locked back. Well, no, on a speed reload, it wouldn't be. I'm sorry. On a speed reload, it wouldn't be locked back anyway. But we don't. We teach people to keep the gun level no matter what kind of reload you're doing for that reason. So, and third thing, he says, place your index finger straight alongside the front strap of the magazine to guide it in to guide it when you get the full magazine and insert it into the magazine well. The tip of your support hand index finger should touch the top round in the magazine. Okay, we're good with that, and we do the same thing. Place the back of the magazine in the magazine well and directly to the rear against the back strap with the rounds of the mag bullet in facing forward, obviously. Quickly move your support hand up in position to quickly rack the slide rearward to chamber around from the new full magazine. See, that part that makes no sense to me. That is completely, it's something that I completely defies everything that we teach in our self-defense classes. Well, here's his take on the tactical reload. Again, this is done when there's a lull in the action, as you say. There's always somebody out there that'll say, well, there's never a lull in action in a gunfight. Of course there is. You know, either the guy is down, he's run away, he's went for cover just like anybody else would. You found cover. There's a number of times when you may have just a second or two to perform a little bit of administrative maneuvers on your procedure on your gun there. So he says, when there's a lull in the action, it may be necessary for you to catch your breath and refresh your partially filled magazine with a fully filled one for the action that follows. You want to retain and keep on your person the magazine with the few rounds left in it that you're ejecting, while quickly inserting a new fully loaded magazine during the break in action. Try to get to cover first if possible and do the reload behind cover. Okay, well, I agree with that, but I'm wondering why he's so important on retaining the partially loaded magazine when he just got through telling us to drop it on the ground for the speed reload. The shooter gets a new magazine with a support hand, moves it towards the gun, releases the mag in the support hand, where it is held at the same time the new mag is inserted into the magazine well. The shooter has two mags in his support hand at the same time. Be careful, dexterity and fine motor skills are involved. And I agree with that. It is a little bit, there's a little bit of a, it's very difficult for someone with very small hands to do this in the beginning effectively with double stack magazines. Not hard with a single stack, you know, 1911 or something like that. But the double stack magazine makes it a little bit tougher to do. I've seen that picture Yakima Glock many times. Yeah, that's a bad one there. That just shows you what someone can do in a second, you know, or less than a second. Let's see, let me get back over here. Let me find my deal here again. It's not at all impossible, and it's not difficult with just a tiny bit of practice to do this tactical reload in the exact manner that he's talking about. I do agree with him. This is the same way we do our tactical reloads, and I think it makes the most sense of the several different ways that people say to do it. I do tell people that have tiny little hands, or I've also had a couple of people that had a little bit of paralysis or missing fingers or something that's made it a little bit more difficult for them. In that case, you know, they're pretty well stuck with having to snatch that partially loaded magazine out, put it in a pocket, grab the other one, and put it back in. You're talking about, you know, not even a half a second to do that, or maybe a second. Yeah, probably a second to do that properly. Let's see. Well, yeah, a second and a half probably. But at any rate, you know, you have to do what you have to do. If you don't have all the fingers that you need to have, or your fingers not working right or something like that, yes, you do have to. I had a guy up in, I can't remember his name right now. But he was up in, took a class up in, the first one he took from me was in New Mexico. And then he flew up to Vancouver when I did the class up there, the 3-day personal defense handgun class. And he had his trigger finger on his firing side. It was kind of stiff and kind of mangled. I don't know what the situation was, why it happened. Had an accident of some kind, and he couldn't bend it. He couldn't pull the trigger with it, so he had to let his index finger ride alongside the frame and pulled the trigger with his middle finger. Now, yes, he could, as we did in our classes, he could do it well with his support hand. But for anyone that has, if you have a physical disability of some kind, a challenge of some style on your firing side, or even on your support side, you still need to learn to run that gun with both hands, with either hand, if at all possible. If your hand's been cut off or you have nothing left but a thumb and a forefinger on your support side, then yeah, that would preclude the use of using that hand to shoot. But if you don't, then you need to learn to do it with but with either hand. So, anyway, I'm in full agreement with him on the tactical reload. The reload with retention. This is another one that I'm not. I don't tell people. I tell them about it, but we don't use it. You would first release your partially loaded magazine. This is actually how Frontsight is starting to teach their tactical reloads now, is you'll take the partially loaded magazine out into your support hand, stow it in your pocket, not on the ground. This is the opposite. This is the difference in that and the speed reload. Stow it in your pocket, then get a fully loaded magazine from your pouch and put it in the gun with rounds still in the magazine, round in the chamber, and from a tight, close, high ready retention position. I'm not a fan of this. For one reason, it's way slow. The second thing is that why would you choose to do that instead of a tactical reload? What is the possible benefit of that? And why would I want to put that magazine in my pocket? That means that the next time, if I have to do this again, let's say that I've shot 2, 3, 4, 5 times with my 17-round magazine. In the stress of all this going on, I lost track of how I wasn't trying to count them. I know I've fired several rounds, but I don't remember, so I'm going to do a tactical reload. Now, in my second 17-round, 15-round, 13-round magazine, I have fired a number of rounds, and I have another little break in the action. I'm going to do a tactical reload again because I think that the magazine that I took out the first time probably has more rounds in it than the second one does. So I'm going to reach for my my magazine carrier. And there's going to be no magazine in there. Then I have to remember that I put it in my pocket. All this while somebody's shooting at me. So that's my reason for not wanting to have anything to do with the reload with retention. It makes the least sense of all of the reloads there. Okay, well, with all that being said, let me make sure I'm not leaving anything out here. Okay, let's go through his. He's got some tips to consider, some reload tips, real quick. Let's go through these. And I agree. The first one here: make sure that your magazines, number one, are facing the same direction. Number two, the bullet end of the magazine, the bullet should be facing the front. I think, was it Yakima Glock, or it may have been Long Slide. One of the other of them had a little bit of a hard time grasping that concept because they've been doing it the other way for so long with the magazine, with the bullets facing towards the rear. But once we explained it to them and they saw the, you know, why we do that and tried it a few times, then they understood and didn't have any problem with it. So, let's see, there's 9 tips here. Let's go through these real quick. We might run over just a couple of minutes. But when you grab a magazine from the pouch and insert it into the magazine well, always index and guide it into place by extending your support hand index finger. We talked about that already. Always safely keep the gun's muzzle pointed downrange or slightly up to the air on your right side while grabbing the mag with your pouch and performing the reload. Okay, I'm all with keeping it pointed in a safe direction downrange. I don't agree with pointing it up at all. Hold the gun up high in the chest or chin area, high retention position with arms in close to the body during reloads and mag changes. I'm all for the arms in close to the body. I don't like to hold it up. If you've done this as many times as I've done it, I don't need to see it. I can do it in the dark. I can do it with my eyes closed. I don't need to hold it up high where I can see it. I want to keep that out of my face so that I can see you know, that gun covers up a certain amount of real estate that I can't see down there. So I'm going to have it down a little lower so that my vision is not obscured in any manner. The third one, keep the gun high in the chest or chin area, high retention possible with arms in. Oh, we just did that one. Never mind. Label your mags by priority, 1, 2, 3, and 4, so you know which ones are the reliable ones and your frequency and order of use. If they're not reliable, why are you carrying them? Or why do you even have them? If it's not reliable, then replace the springs in them or throw them away, one or the other. Number 5, ensure the mags always face the same direction in your magazine pouch. Yeah, we've been through that. You can grab them and insert them correctly. Number 6, rotate and shoot your various magazines often, especially your carry ones, to ensure that they function well. Nothing wrong with that. I agree with that. I try to change my carry mag springs once a year, so that's ridiculous. Well, I guess it depends on the gun and the quality of your springs. But, you know, I've gone 5 years before I've changed magazine springs in a Glock, and I have never, ever had a single malfunction related to springs. Probably could have gone 5 more without any problem. Never place empty magazines back in the mag pouch. I agree 100%. So you can expect the magazine you reach for to be loaded. Some say put only fully loaded magazines in the pouch, while others say put partially loaded magazines in your pocket. If it's got even one round in it, I say put it back in the pouch. If I instinctively reach for that, and if there's one round in it, that, like I said, that may be the one that gets me home. Buy me a little time anyway. Divide your magazines into 2 categories, practice and personal protection or home defense. Yeah, I do that. What I've done on my magazines, I've taken a little red, a little bit of fingernail polish and put on the little detent on the base plate of the magazine, the floor plate, and to distinguish the difference between practice magazines and my carry magazines. Have at least 4 magazines per gun. Since they are easily damaged, are perishable, and will not last forever, your purpose and use for the gun influence the number of mags that you should own. Don't delay. Order extra magazines. Well, I'm more of the opinion use have like 10 magazines for your gun, especially if you're looking at long-term use, sir. Well, let me check my chat room here and see what's going on real quick. Let's see here. Yeah, I remember that Yakima Glock. I believe that I've seen that magazine holder that you made. I think you had it. I think last time I was up there. I know time before last. I'm almost certain, but I remember we discussed that quite a bit. All right. Well, with all that being said, and we are just a little bit over time. That's all right. Easy to doctor it up so the Tinker can get his archives right. And I don't know if the Tinker is still with us or not. Let me go check here before I turn everything off. Well, no, I'll get with him later. Don't worry about it. All right, I will see you all again Wednesday night. We have more gun stuff to talk about Wednesday. This week, we're going to start our cartridge of the week again. And I'm going to bounce back and forth a little bit, so if someone has a particular cartridge that they want, send it in, email it to me, or put it in the chat room. I won't do it the night that you put it in. But you could email it to me to theshootingbench@live.com, theshootingbench@live.com. And if it's not one I'm familiar with, I'll get the information on it and we'll talk about it. But I am going to bounce around a little bit, so if I just tell everybody we're going to start with the 22s and work our way up to the 460 Weatherby Magnum or something, then they don't have to wait for 4 months to get to their favorite 416 Rigby or whatever. So we'll bounce all over the place without any rhyme or reason why we're doing it, so that and like I said, if you got a request, put it in the chat room or email it to me. All right. I am getting out of here right now, and I'll see you guys Wednesday night. Thanks for joining me. Well, that wraps up another edition of The Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for The Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No explanation, no reconciliation.